Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
Hey, 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 I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Alice Marcus Krieg of Groundworks, Inc., and Carmen today is on jury duty, unfortunately. So it's just me, and we have a really fun show today. We bring the culture to horticulture, and today we have a great lady of horticulture with us, Maria Zampini of Upshoot Horticulture, sharing her new book, Gardenpedia, by St. Lynn's Press, and co-authored with Pam Bennett. But before we do that, we have to do our horticultural honor roll. So today's honoree is Harriet Kirkpatrick. She is an unlikely accidental heroine. To us, Harriet represents the best of the horticultural spirit, a little bit of luck, a good eye for plants, and the willingness to share their plants and gardening passion with others. So here's a little bit about Harriet Kirkpatrick, and she's known for discovering the popular hydrangea Annabelle. Our story begins in 1910 when Harriet Kirkpatrick was out horseback riding along a wooded trail in the country outside Anna, Illinois. First, a little interesting background on the family. Kirkpatrick pottery is known for utilitarian and ceremonial presentation pottery, mostly ceramic pigs, throughout the 18th and the 19th centuries. The family was so wealthy that it could participate in activities like horseback riding. Pottery manufacturing was located where the clay and the railroads were, and geologists reported that some of the finest clay was found in and around Anna, Illinois. So today, the Kirkpatrick Anna pottery ceramic pieces have found their way into museums and collectors. So our story begins with wealthy Harriet galloping through the woods, and she noticed a wild hydrangea with large, more robust, snowball-like blooms than the others. And she summoned her sister-in-law, Amy. "Have you ever seen such a wild hydrangea with such big balls? So what do you do?" Well, as we would have done, they scarfed it up and they planted it in their garden. And also, as we would have done, they proudly shared it with their neighbors and their friends around the town. So 50 years later, and growing 20 miles away in an Urbana, Illinois garden, it was brought to the attention of a famous plantsman, J.C. McDaniel, and he's a professor of horticulture. So 2 years later, after some nursery propagation and further investigation, it was introduced to the world. He first wanted to name the hydrangea Ballerina, but ballerinas are not usually big and rotund. So a second name was selected to honor the Belles of Anna, who discovered it, Anna Bell. So today's heroine is our guest, Maria Zampini. She has a great eye for new plants and doesn't mind sharing and spreading a little bit of the horticultural gospel herself. Maria is a fourth-generation nurseryman, and proud of it. Horticulture flows deep in her family veins. After graduating from Penn State University with a Bachelor of Science in Horticulture, she managed the family-owned 1,000-acre Lake County Nursery, which is a wholesale nursery, Champion Garden Town, Inc., a premier destination attraction garden center, and New Plants, Inc., the new plant research and development division. Maria took a new path in 2009, partnering with her father, Jim Zampini, to form a company called Upshoot, LLC, where she focuses her many talents and industry experience on sales, marketing, and licensing of new plants while continuing plant research and development for international clientele. Maria currently writes a monthly column in American Nurseryman, a horticultural industry trade magazine, and is also a contributing editor for Horticulture magazine. She was also the first female president of the Ohio Nursery and Landscape Association and is a regional director for the Garden Writers Association. So welcome, Maria. We're so pleased to have you back on our show today.
Well, thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it. I always love getting together with you and Carmen, and I will miss her today.
I know.
So gotta give her kudos for doing her duty, though.
Exactly. So are you guys getting much snow out there in Ohio?
Oh, my God, yes. Oh, well, I live in the snow belt northeast of Cleveland. And, yes, we got absolutely buried. My Sunday was spent shoveling snow all day, pretty much. So.
Yeah, we're getting crazy amounts here right now, and we had a very icy morning. So that's why, for our listeners, the sound is a little strange today because we're both calling in safe off the roads in our homes.
this is true. I really wanted to get to a landline for you guys, but I didn't. They were telling people here, you know, don't travel unless you absolutely have to today.
Yeah, exactly. So, before we get into the book, you do a lot of traveling, Maria. We follow you on social media, and you even have a hashtag called Where is Maria, which I think is hilarious. The last time we saw you was at the Garden Writers Conference in Pittsburgh. So what have you been up to since then?
Oh, a lot of things. You know, January in the wholesale industry is trade show month. So
right.
I just finished up four different trade shows in the month of January. So I was in Kansas City, Greensboro, North Carolina, Baltimore, Maryland, and just last week, Mobile, Alabama, which I got to tell you, it was really difficult coming back from Mobile on Friday,
yeah.
Which was probably 60 to a whopping, you know, 17 degrees in northeast Ohio. So
right.
But I would say the most exciting thing that I've done since I've seen you was in October I traveled to Scotland for my cousin's wedding, and on the way there I went through Amsterdam, and I spent 3 days doing nothing but touring nurseries, looking at new plant introductions that I've got a partner over there who works in bringing some of our new plants to the European market, and then we represent their plants here in the United States.
So awesome.
Very intense 3 days. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear more and watch more about what's going to come out from that specific trip.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. It was a little bit of plant overload, but in a good way. So
you must have a lot of airplane miles, Maria.
Yeah, I do. Southwest loves me. I did make A-list this year, but that's all right.
Good. All right. Well, let's get into the book. Of course, we totally see the need for it. Gardenpedia. What made you decide to take the time to bring it to print, and who do you think the book is most geared towards as a population?
Well, I mean, and Gardenpedia it's an A to Z guide to gardening terms. And, you know, I actually got the idea, you know, you mentioned how I grew up in the family's wholesale and retail garden center businesses, and we would always hire people who maybe didn't have a horticultural background, which was fine, but there would be some of that jargon we would use on a daily basis. But they didn't know what it was. They didn't
right.
know what some words meant. And I always had it in the back of my mind, I should have some kind of dictionary as part of our employee manual. And it just never happened. And then as I began to do more writing in my career, I realized when I was writing for consumer magazines, you know, and let's say I was writing about, you know, a new method of propagation called, say, grafting or budding,
right.
I have to stop and go, well, wait a minute, you grew up with that. You know those terms. Chances are the end reader is not gonna know what that means.
Right.
And then my co-author, Pam Bennett, she is the coordinator for the Master Gardener program in the state of Ohio. And she says, you know, Maria, there is no textbook really for Master Gardeners.
Right.
So we kind of identified, wow, it could be used in the trade. It could be used by, you know, the person, the home gardener. It could be used by the Master Gardener who's doing training and wants to learn more. So we really found we thought it had multiple applications. And when we did a little research to see if there were any books like this out there, everything was so technical in nature and dry and boring, and who the heck would ever read that stuff anyway?
Right.
And so this is very conversational in tone. It would be just like if I was sitting here and we were having a conversation and you said, well, Maria, what does this mean? And I would say, well, Alice, here's what this means to me.
Yeah. So let's do some of that now. I think our listeners would love to get some examples since they don't have the book in front of them. So here's a term, ball and burlap. Now, we use that term all the time, but a lot of our clients are like, what? You know, they think we're talking about some crazy method or they just have no idea. So can you explain that term?
Sure. Well, when a wholesale grower is producing a plant and it's being grown out in the field versus being grown on top of the ground in some type of pot or container, when it's grown in the field, you have a couple ways that you can harvest that plant to get it to the end market. One way is to dig the tree up and to dig it so that there is a root ball, a mass of dirt that is around the roots of the plant, and then it's wrapped with burlap, and then either it's held in place by either a combination of twine, of wire, and of actual something called nailing pins. And they actually look almost like nails, only they're very skinny and they're long, and it's almost like you're sewing it. You're kind of twisting it in between the burlap and holding that burlap in place.
Right.
So again, that's balled and burlap.
And let's talk about bare root. That's the other method.
Sure. And that would be the other method for harvesting a plant that's actually growing in the ground, such as a tree or a shrub. That is where you go in and you harvest the plant, but you shake or remove all of the dirt that surrounds the root system. So it's essentially soilless. It's free of soil. It's roots are bare roots.
Yeah, I just got, I ordered some citrus plants for my father for a Christmas present, and they came bare root. And it was, you know, it's a little dicey because you have to really pay attention to the shipping so that they're not sitting naked without their soil, but it makes shipping a lot easier. Is that the principal reason for using that method?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. I mean, for instance, if you're ordering something, you know, via catalog, well, it's going to be a lot less expensive if you're ordering this plant and there's no soil around it. But you have to take some extra added care with it because there is no soil around those roots, and so they could tend to dry out very quickly. So, you know, you just need to kind of pay attention more. And then within the industry, there are people who grow baby trees, say, out on the West Coast in the Portland area. That's where a lot of baby plants are grown, baby trees. And so they are harvested bare root, and then they're picked up, and those are shipped via truck all across the United States, where another nursery will take them and plant them in the ground and grow them onto a much larger size, and they'll eventually dig them either bare root or will have grown them in a container, which will make it to the end consumer.
Right. So, Maria, you mentioned another term, and let's talk about this because this comes up a lot with our clients, the term grafting. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that?
So there are many methods of propagation, of reproducing a plant. And I guess one of the things I would want to make mention of in the book is not only do we give you one sentence that kind of gives you the actual definition, but then we also give you paragraphs afterwards on most terms that give you a little more detail or explains why something is important for you to know as a gardener.
Right.
And or we try and follow it up with a picture. Because, you know, a picture can be worth 1,000 words.
Right.
So that's what we've tried to do in the book. And grafting is probably one of those words that is better if you were trying to describe it face-to-face. But in essence, grafting is it's a type of propagation in which you're going to take two separate plants, and you're going to join them together to form one new plant. So an example of that would be maybe you have a tree that, you know, you really want to grow this tree, but it just does not produce a good root system. So you take a compatible tree that produces a very nice root system, and so you've grown this little plant, it's got a nice root system, and then maybe a couple inches off the ground, you go and you actually cut it off. And then you take let's just call it a branch off of a new tree that doesn't have the good root system, and you're going to go and take that little twig and you're actually going to attach it to the plant that's got the root. And then you almost like take this rubber band substance that holds them together and that they'll hold those two plants together until they, let's say, we'll use the term knit, meaning they mesh together. Okay?
Right.
They kind of form and become one. So
uh-huh.
It's a method of propagation.
Right. And I think the application that people most hear about that term is in roses, right?
Right, right. You can do budding and even use grafting on roses.
Right.
And, that would be an example.
So when you were writing the book with Pamela, it must have been kind of tough to narrow down the terms to make the book practical because it's such a huge, huge language, you know. So what were some of the criteria that you and Pamela used to make the final selections?
Well, that did take us a little bit of time because we really probably came up with about 600 words that we thought might be possibilities. And then from there, we narrowed it down, and we kind of tried to go, if what's the most important things, what are the most important things that we think everybody needs to know, or the most common terms that are out there, or the most common terms that are misunderstood or not heard of, maybe native versus nativar. That would be something. Nativar is a relatively new term, and native is a hot word you hear out there now. So we said, we got to have those in there. So we actually have this whole list of other terms that they're good words, but they're maybe not words that are used on a daily basis within a conversation, be it in an article. And we said, you know what, let's just leave those over here, and maybe someday there'll be a Gardenpedia too.
Right.
And if so, then we'll use those. And we are also encouraging people who do get the book, hey, if there's a term that we've missed and you feel it's important, to reach out to us through social media or email and let us know that because we can always look at adding it next time.
Right. All right. Before we take a break, I would love for you to explain, because this is like another one of those hot words that is often misused. Explain the word heirloom.
Ah, okay. All right. Well, see, and don't laugh at me, but I am looking it up in the book because I like to make sure that I get it exactly how we have it.
Right.
So it's a plant that has been cultivated using the same method for more than 50 years and whose seeds are passed down from generation to generation.
Right.
So it's something that's been around a very long time, and there's nothing has been done to alter that seed or that plant.
Good. I love that. I love that clear definition, and I loved reading it in the book because it was so clean. And I just wanted to put it out there in the kind of virtual world.
Sure, no problem.
Okay, hang on. We're going to take a short break. You're listening to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network.
Since 2001, Heritage Foods USA has sold pasture-raised, antibiotic-free heritage meats to restaurants and homes around the country. Our farmers raise their animals with care using traditional methods guaranteed to produce the very best-tasting meat. Our pork breeds include Berkshire, Red Wattle, Duroc, Gloucester Old Spot, Large Black, and Tamworth, and our beef comes from Piedmontese, Angus Akiyushi, Belgian Blue, Highland, Simmental, and Belted Galloway cattle. We also carry a rotation of 24 rare breeds of heritage chicken, seasonal specialties like lamb, goat, geese, and of course, heritage turkeys. Visit us online at www.heritagefoodsusa.com or give us a call at 718-389-0985 to place your order today.
We're back on We Dig Plants. We have a special guest today, Maria Zampini of Upshoot Horticulture, discussing her new book, Gardenpedia, co-authored with Pam Bennett and published by St. Lin's Press. So let's get into a few more practical terms that we think are often mentioned in gardening manuals, but people find confusing. And two come to mind immediately, pinching and rejuvenation. Can you describe the differences between those two terms, Maria?
Sure. Pinching, it's a type of pruning method in which you use your fingertips to remove the soft tissue, and you're encouraging branching of a stem. And I might use pinching when I'm talking about, let's say your coleus. Okay, you've got your coleus, and maybe you can see it starting to form some flower buds, and you don't want it to do that. So you go and you pinch off the tip. Or you think maybe your plant looks a little leggy, and so you go and you pinch it off, a couple stems down. And wherever you pinch it, you're not going to have just one stem grow back. You'll have two stems grow back, okay? So you're encouraging a new flush of growth. Rejuvenation, I think the best example I can think of for rejuvenation, that is, that's the act of pruning or cutting a plant back to the ground or near the ground in order to make it look a little better. And again, the example I would come up with would be, say, shrub dogwoods, or even for me, I've got a large passionate hydrangea, which is a paniculata variety. And both of those items, what I do is I go in early spring and I literally just hack those plants almost right down to the ground, every
right.
single step. You're not doing selective pruning. You're going and you're really just chopping them off, and then they'll just all flush and come back up beautiful from the ground on up for you.
Exactly. So here's a term that people often confuse and misunderstand, hardiness, H-A-R-D-I-N-E-S-S. We find ourselves often explaining this to our clients, that some of the plants that they want, that they see in magazines, are not hardy. But a lot of our clients confuse this with the word hardy, H-E-R-T-Y. So can you explain what it is for a plant to be hardy, H-A-R-D-Y?
Sure. The ability of a plant to withstand extreme weather conditions and is considered hardiness. And it's most commonly associated with either cold hardiness or heat tolerance. And so generally when you purchase a plant, it will tell you this plant can survive to, say, zone 4. And zone 4 or zone 5, whatever zone it says, it's just like this temperature range
right.
that the USDA has established. And it just means, you know what, theoretically, in the best conditions, it's going to survive to within those cold temperatures. Now, you know as well as I do, not everything is black and white.
Right.
So I could take, you know, if I could take something like a weeping cedar, for instance. They're not really hardy to my area. But I could go put them on a protected side of a building, and maybe if the weather is just right, they will survive 1 or 2 or 3 years or however long, but chances are eventually we're going to get a really bad winter, maybe like what we had last year, and it's going to be gone and it's going to die, and I just need to know that that will likely happen.
Okay? Right.
Additionally, then you have something, you know, heat hardiness. And that means, you know, it will indicate a plant's ability to survive the heat, the sun, wind, and periods of drought. So there's certain plants that are going to survive, and not only survive, but thrive maybe in heat hardiness zones, maybe in Florida, that aren't going to do as well in other parts of the country. Okay,
so that leads me to my question of... explaining how it is then that they developed a hardy crepe myrtle, that because now in our New York market we can buy crepe myrtles that are hardy. Mm-hmm. You know, if you know anything, if our listeners know anything about crepe myrtles, that's a typical southern plant that never could live up here because of our cold, long. Mm-hmm. Winters. So how are they making those varieties more tolerable? It's, what are they doing?
Yeah, it's truly a trial and error and selection process. You know, in our area here where I live, at one point in time, Coosa dogwood, Cornus coosa or Cornus coosa chinensis, were not really hardy to this area. And my dad did some breeding work with that where he had a stand of literally thousands of dogwoods. And what happened was he was observing them, and after the freeze of 1977 and 78, he went and looked at that stand, and there were like only 60 that survived. So he went and he took those and utilized those to make further selections from and to utilize this breeding work. So it's the same thing. You know, you're taking, you know, seed and cuttings and seeing what survives, what doesn't, and then continuing to use what does survive as newer breeding stock.
Yeah. I'm really interested in the hardy gardenias that they're working on now, and mm-hmm. really hope that they can get those going, because that smell is so intoxicating. I have a quote-unquote hardy gardenia planted in my front stoop garden here in the city, and I wrapped it and I did everything I could short of bringing it inside,
right.
And every time I walk by it, I just say some nice words to it and hope that it lasts. We'll see.
Right.
But I know
right.
Like you said, if it is planted against a rock wall or, you know, in an area that is not wrought with wind, you know, they can survive these new varieties. So let's hope. It's really alchemy,
right.
you know, that's happening.
Right. But it's all Mother Nature. And I will tell you, coming from the wholesale industry, I look at Mother Nature like let's relate it to baseball, okay? She is going to, you know, she's a pitcher, and she's going to throw you a curveball. You know, she's going to throw something over the base, okay?
Right.
And you got to try and hit it. You just don't know what it's going to be. And chances are there's going to be some kind of curveball that's going to come. And something that generally always survives every spring, one spring or another, it's going to be dead. I mean, I remember one year we dug all kind of weigelias, and once we dug them and shipped them all out, only then did we find out they were all dead. Right. If something happened where it got warm, the sap flew, you know, started flowing, and then you had a cold snap and it affected that particular plant. Even though it's hardy to our area, Mother Nature just, you know, threw you that curveball. It always happens.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And that's actually the beauty, I think, of gardening, is that it is such a process and there's no set rules for it, you know?
Right, exactly.
Okay, so speaking of set rules, and because you brought up hydrangeas, and because our horticultural honoree today was about hydrangeas, let's talk about when to prune them. I think everybody has this fear of when to prune the hydrangea. Can you give us some tips on and rules of thumb for that?
Sure, no problem. And I guess I would preface that by saying, you know what? If you prune it at the wrong time, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
Maybe all you did was prune off the flowers, but you didn't kill it. It'll be around.
Right.
The world doesn't stop spinning. I think what you have to do is you need to know what type of hydrangea you have. And you need to know, think of hydrangea, which is the genus, as maybe your brand of genes. It's your Levi's. Okay.
Right.
And then your species, which is really critical because that's going to help tell you whether it blooms on old wood or new wood. Think of that as your blue jeans. And then your cultivar is the specific type, whether it's your skinny jeans, your flare jeans, you know, your straight leg jeans. And so it's really important that you know what that species, that type of blue jeans or type of hydrangea is, so that you know whether it blooms on old wood or new wood. And I'll give you the best example might be, say, your hydrangea macrophylla. That's those, they have big, fat balls of flowers every year, okay?
Right.
And they bloom on old wood, meaning they come through the wintertime and their buds are already set. And so if you come in the spring and you chop them off, you literally just chopped off all the flowers. So for that, you need to wait until it finishes blooming, and then you want to go in and trim it, and it still has time to set buds before it goes into the wintertime.
Right.
Maybe, you know, your panicle hydrangea, you know, that's going to appear on new wood. And I mentioned earlier, my panicle hydrangea, which is a tardiva called Passionate, I will go in the springtime and just chop that off because the new growth is going to come up, and on that new wood is where the new flowers are going to generate from.
So rejuvenate.
Yes, you need to rejuvenate it, and it'll give you that. And it'll give you, and honestly, want to do that because that way, instead of maybe just having six stems and getting six flowers, if I go and chop that off, I'm now going to get maybe 12 to 18 stems and that many more flowers.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
So don't you think, Maria, that there's been kind of a general dumbing down with regard to horticulture and gardening? Even though there's a new generation of people getting into gardening on a smaller scale, I feel like there's so much information between blogs and websites that is incorrect or incomplete. And your book is really a start in the right direction, hence the name Gardenpedia. But how do we get better information out to the public?
Well, I think, you know, I look at the landscaping and the things I do around my house. You know, it's an investment in my home. No different than whatever I'm doing on the inside. And I think homeowners need to consider it. So think about it. When you're going to go buy your TV, do you just say, oh, that's it, I'm going to go buy, you know, a Zenith TV today? No, you generally do a little bit of homework. And what might you do? Well, you might ask your family and friends, or you might ask the guy that works at the local TV store or at Best Buy. And I think that's what we need to try to do is before we make that investment, is ask our neighbors, our family, our friends, other master gardeners, people who are in the know, you know, do our due diligence. We've got Google now at our fingertips.
Right.
And you don't just get something from one source. And so even myself, when I'm doing research on plants, I never just go to one source on the web. I'm always looking at 2, 3, 4, 5 sources and kind of getting the general consensus. And I think that's what we need to do as gardeners.
Yeah, I agree. And I think also, like, going to the authorities, like the botanical gardens or the, you know, the college extension agencies. Like, exactly. You know, if you go to a reputable source to begin with and not just some design blog, you know, with somebody blogging, I think you're setting yourself up for more success.
Exactly. Get your, you know what? You know, just like in business, a lot of people will have a mentor. There's someone that they go to. And they may not have the exact answer, but they may be able to say, well, you know what? If I were you, I would check here, here, and here. Or, you know what? I've done that before. I've made that mistake. Don't make that mistake yourself. Do this instead. And I think you can look for your gardening mentor as well, whether that's a master gardener, someone who has a horticulture degree, works at a garden center, is in the botanical garden or, you know, an extension or whatever. Look for those people who can give you some good, sound, solid advice.
Good. And before we let you go, please share some of the exciting new plants that are being introduced for 2015. We took a few home from Pittsburgh, but what can we look forward to this spring?
Oh, wow. There's a lot of really cool things that are happening in the horticultural world. You know, in Pittsburgh, I showcased a couple new items from a breeder friend based out of Oregon. He's got something called Marley's Pink. It's a weeping styrax with pink flowers that are fragrant. Persian Spire Parodia. It's an upright form with a... It's a very durable plant in the urban landscape. You know, I also work with HGTV on their new home plant collection, and we're doing some very cool things there. We've got this new patio pinois. It's a dwarf grape, and we also have something called ketchup and fries, which is a tomato grafted onto a potato, so you can harvest the tomatoes and then have your potatoes a little bit later on in the season.
Holy cow, that's incredible.
Yeah,
really?
I know. Yeah, honest to goodness, not. Wouldn't kid you at all. And then
what's the name of that again?
It's called Ketchup and Fries.
Ketchup and Fries is amazing. So is it now out in commerce?
It will be this spring. This is the first time it'll be in the United States. And so any of these plants I mentioned, you know, sometimes, yes, it can be difficult to find them the first year in commerce, and it can take a while to get some things built up, but you'll find them. And, we've got a cool new hydrangea called Peppermint Swirl, and I know a lot of people will think, well, now how many more macrophylla hydrangeas could you possibly need? Well, this one looks really cool. It looks like you took a paintbrush and you flicked paint onto the petals and onto the leaves, and so it's pink. It's naturally pink with like this red streaking through the florets on the petals and on the leaves. So some really cool stuff that we're working with.
That one, it sounds beautiful, but I'm actually a little scared if that gets into the public's hands and how we're going to see that displayed.
I think
there could be some kaleidoscope gardening going on.
Yeah, there you go. Well, to each his own. I look at it just like clothing. There's no right or wrong in your garden because, you know what, if it makes you happy, to me that's all that counts.
It's true. It may not be
the way I do my landscape or my garden, but if it makes you happy, then it's all good.
It's true. Well, Maria, thank you so much for joining us and for, you know, bringing a little bit of spring and excitement into this dreary, snowy, icy, cold day that we're all having.
Well, you are more than welcome. If they want to find out about some of those new plants, they can go to my website, which is upshootport.com. And then I also have under the writing tab the link to Gardenpedia, and you know they can find it at their local bookstores or you know Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any of the players in the world.
And we'll be posting a link to your website and to the book as on Facebook.
Great.
So
great.
Thanks,
well,
Maria.
Thank you so
Stay
much.
Warm.
All right, you too. Bye
okay.
now.
Okay, I want to just end today's show with a few words about our fans, and we have one fan in particular, a man named Joshua Rederer, who was the winner last week of our weekly giveaway. And not only is he a loyal fan and an amazing gardener, but he is a philanthropist, and he is passing along his winning prize, which was a gift certificate to Landreth Seeds, to a class at Gilead Christian School. And they will be growing and selling plants for fundraising and learning projects. So our prize is now working double duty. It is amazing. So Joshua, thank you for being such a local fan and for sharing your passion for gardening with the kids. If you want to win, like Joshua did, go to our Facebook fan page, Groundworks Inc. We Dig Plants, and follow us. Or follow us on Instagram at Groundworks Gardens NYC to be entered into our weekly drawing. This month's prizes are being donated by the GardenToolCompany.com, one of our favorite sources for quality gardening tools. Our show's been written and produced by Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Krieg, engineered by Jack Inslee. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.